This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 755 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. In Gaza, Israel continued to break the ceasefire by killing and injuring Palestinians in airstrikes and drone attacks, and by sustaining the brutal siege on humanitarian aid and necessary equipment to feed people, rebuild infrastructure, and save lives. On October 28th, Israel claimed that Palestinian resistance forces killed an Israeli soldier in Rafah, and alleged that the body of an Israeli captive transferred from Gaza by Hamas did not match one of the 13 to be handed over as part of the ceasefire. The Israeli government stated that it would resume wide-scale attacks, and that night, Israeli airstrikes killed at least 104 Palestinians, including 46 children, and injured more than 250. Journalist Mohannad Al-Jabari filmed Palestinians carrying the bodies of their loved ones, including many children wrapped in small white shrouds, to cemeteries on Wednesday morning. Hamas rejected Israel's claims, saying its armed wing had no connection to any attack on Israeli soldiers in Rafah, and called on the international mediators to take immediate action to rein Israel in. The political party called Israel's airstrikes, quote, an extension of a series of violations committed over the past few days, including attacks that resulted in deaths and injuries, and the continued closure of the Rafah crossing, which confirms the insistence on violating the terms of the agreement and attempting to sabotage it. Since the ceasefire took hold on October 10th, at least 211 Palestinians have been killed and more than 500 injured, according to Gaza's health ministry. The Gaza government media office tallied at least 125 violations by Israel of the ceasefire before Tuesday's attacks. Included in that number were at least 52 shooting operations directly targeting civilians, 9 incursions of its vehicles into residential neighborhoods, crossing the so-called yellow line, in addition to 55 shelling and targeting operations and 11 bombings of civilian buildings. 21 citizens were arrested in various areas of the Gaza Strip as well, the media office stated. On Monday, an Israeli drone strike near Khan Yunis in the south killed at least 2 Palestinians. In the aftermath of Tuesday's airstrikes, Gaza's civil defense spokesperson Mahmoud Bassal said that rescue workers were still trying to recover the dead and wounded from underneath massive amounts of rubble. Hospitals were overwhelmed with injured people, he said. What is happening in Gaza today is a disgrace to humanity and highlights the international community's complicity through its silence in these violations. The continuation of these crimes amidst the world's silence is an unforgivable moral and humanitarian failure, Mahmoud Bassal said. Al Jazeera's Hani Mahmoud stated on Wednesday that emergency medical staff at Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City were reporting that their patients were coming in with severe shrapnel injuries from the Israeli missile strikes. Quote, the bombs and drone missiles fired by the Israeli military are packed with shrapnel, nails, and pieces of metal. And when they explode, that flies at very high speed and pierces through bodies. Many patients are bleeding internally. That's increasing the pressure on medical staff. And the fear did not end. There are still drones here in the skies of Gaza City. The kamikaze drones are hovering at a very dangerous low level, causing panic and fear, Hani Mahmoud said. On Wednesday, October 29th, 2 Palestinians were killed in the northern city of Beit Lahia after Israel claimed it targeted a weapons storage facility, in direct continuation of attacks even after it announced it was back to abiding by the ceasefire following the massacres on Tuesday. Euromed Human Rights Monitor stated that, quote, Israel's genocide in Gaza has not ended. It has merely shifted into a quieter, less visible phase. By maintaining the siege and allowing intermittent attacks that kill civilians, Israel sustains a gradual process of extermination, while the world falsely claims the genocide has stopped. More Palestinian bodies were returned to Gaza this week by the Israeli military, many showing indications of torture and field executions, and many were returned unidentified. 41 bodies were buried with dignity in southern Gaza on Monday. The health ministry in Gaza announced that it was opening up a new civil office to work on identifying the remains of hundreds of Palestinians who have been returned to Gaza by Israel without any identifying information. The ministry also launched an online portal to help families identify their missing relatives. On Wednesday, approximately 100 bodies of Palestinians belonging to the Al-Shahebar family, who were massacred in November 2023 in the Sabra neighborhood of Gaza City, were finally recovered and buried by their surviving relatives and community nearly 2 full years after they were slaughtered. Euromed Human Rights Monitor had carried out initial documentation of the series of massacres. According to their research, the attacks, quote, which took place over 2 days, November 17th and 18th, 2023, saw the use of aircraft and drones to target residential buildings, civilians inside their homes, and those attempting to bury relatives killed in earlier attacks. As civil defense crews tried to recover thousands of Palestinians still missing and buried under the rubble caused by 2 years of Israel's ongoing assault, Israel maintains a total blockade on heavy machinery and recovery equipment. But it did allow in several heavy vehicles from Egypt in order to only locate and retrieve the bodies of the remaining Israeli captives. Reporter Issa Siam captured Egyptian heavy machinery operating in central Gaza on Monday. Drop Site News' Jeremy Scahill talked about the double standards in the context of whose bodies are deemed more important to recover on Democracy Now! Earlier this week.
There are believed to be roughly 13 or so bodies of Israeli captives left. The great Yemeni cartoonist Kamal Sharaf had a piece of art the other day that showed a camera snaked to a piece of construction equipment pummeling through the ground past dead Palestinian bodies to try to find one Israeli body. And, you know, everything that Israel has accused the Palestinians of, Israel does as a matter of doctrine. You know, the confession, you know, the accusation is the confession. And we've seen that for 2 years. Donald Trump said, what kind of sick people hold dead bodies? Israel, since 1967, has had a policy of holding the bodies of Palestinians. As of before the genocide, there were believed to be more than 720 Palestinian bodies being held in coolers and numbered graves by Israel. There may be as many as 1,500 Palestinian bodies held by Israel since October 7th. So estimates are more than 2,000 dead Palestinian bodies are being held by Israel right now. One Palestinian political prisoner, his body has been held since 1980.
Jeremy Scahill on Democracy Now! Earlier this week. Turning to the occupied West Bank, we continue our reporting on the escalating attacks by Jewish Israeli settlers and soldiers on Palestinians. My colleague Tamara Nassar reports that in the first 2 weeks of the olive harvest season, which began in October, the UN monitoring group OCHA documented more than 85 harvest-related settler attacks on Palestinians and their property across 50 towns and villages in the occupied West Bank. The following is from Tamara's article, Olive Harvest Season Marked with Assault by Jewish Settlers. More than 110 Palestinians have been injured, 50 of them by Jewish settlers and the rest by the military. Settler attacks during the harvest season have ranged from violent assaults on farmers, theft of olives and harvesting equipment, and cutting down or uprooting trees, to obstructing access to land, among other violent attacks, including burning cars belonging to Palestinian residents. In many incidents, Israeli soldiers accompany the extremist settlers, either standing idly by or actively assisting the attacking settlers, said Yesh Din, an Israeli group that monitors settler activity in the West Bank. Both settlers and soldiers, quote, have so far enjoyed complete impunity for attacks against Palestinians, even deadly ones, the United Nations Human Rights Office said on Monday. In the first week of October, settlers had already cut down some 300 trees, according to Yesh Din. The group said no arrests were made and shared pictures from the Palestinian villages of Kafr Kadum in the north and Sa'ir in the south. The number has grown at least tenfold since, with more than 300 trees and saplings, primarily olive, vandalized, OCHA reported. Tamara adds that these increasing attacks come on the heels of Israel's stated ambitions for further control, theft, and annexation of the West Bank. The UN Human Rights Office said that, quote, settler violence is escalating far beyond the olive harvest season, making life impossible for Palestinians in many communities across the occupied West Bank and leaving them with no genuine choice but to leave their homes. Even as Israeli politicians and lobbyists try to muzzle exposure of Jewish settler violence against Palestinians by calling it blood libel, settlers brag about the crimes they commit against Palestinians on their private communication channels. Quote, the offenders proudly count the number of Palestinians they've injured, the houses and vehicles they burned, and the damage caused to thousands of trees and other Palestinian property, Yeshdin reported. That's all from Tamara Nassar's recent article, Olive Harvest Season Marked with Assault by Jewish Settlers, on electronicintifada.net. Settlers stormed the village of Tuba in Masafer Yatta in the southern West Bank earlier this week. On Wednesday, Israeli settlers reportedly destroyed hundreds of ancient olive trees in the village of Karyut, south of Nablus, according to the Wafa news agency. Farmers said they were shocked to find their olive trees destroyed when they entered their lands in the western area of the village after obtaining a two-day access permit from the Israeli army. The lands are located near the illegal colony of Eli, built on the lands of the villages of Karyut, Al-Sawiya, and Al-Luban Al-Shakia. Local sources noted that this is the second consecutive year that settlers have carried out similar attacks of destruction in the same area, Wafa reported. On Wednesday evening, Israeli settlers attacked the village of Burka, east of Ramallah, Wafa stated. Settlers attacked the outskirts of the village and attempted to storm it before being confronted by local residents. Israeli forces later stormed the village following the attack, Wafa added. Meanwhile, the Israeli army raided the village of Umm al-Khair in Masafer Yatta on Tuesday morning and handed residents a stack of demolition orders, the latest in a decades-long series of attacks and plans to completely destroy the Masafer Yatta villages and expand the nearby settlement colonies. Village resident Aid Hathaleen recorded this clip on Tuesday, showing the demolition orders.
Hello from Umm al-Khair, this is Eid. Umm al-Khair community today shocked by this large number of demolition orders, which included everything standing here in Umm al-Khair, all structures which rebuilded and built before almost 15 years ago. And also it's include agriculture facilities, also the community center, also living houses, also stores, also kitchens. And we have these type of orders in hand. We have two type of orders. One of them is the final demolition order. This means we have 4 days to appeal in the Israeli court. And this one is a stop working order, which given to a new house.
We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight Displacement Begins with a Scissors Cut by Isra Al-Sigali in Gaza. Isra writes, quote, when the Israeli military ordered us to evacuate the north, I cut my hair. When I told my mother, Hadia, that I wanted to cut my hair, she didn't look at me. She didn't even pause from folding the clothes into the suitcase. Go ahead, cut it, she snapped. Her voice was sharp, clipped, like the scissors were about to be. My sister Basma stood behind me, gathering the long river of my hair in her fingers. It reached below my waist, a curtain I had carried for years. She combed slowly, carefully, tugging at knots with a patience that felt like grief. For months since the collapse of the last ceasefire in March, I had promised myself, if there was even the smallest chance the negotiations would succeed, I would keep my hair. Every night I opened Telegram, scrolling for news that might save it. Every morning, nothing. The teeth of the comb whispered through my hair. For a moment, I imagined we were still at home on just another day, my sister braiding my hair. But the smell of gunpowder and smoke and the half-filled bags in the corner of a room of my brother-in-law's uncle's house in Al Rimal, where many relatives had sought shelter, reminded me this was not a comforting routine, but a farewell. She braided tightly, her fingers moving as if she were binding memories into the strands. When she tied the end and laid the braid against my back, her hands lingered. She hesitated. "What a loss," she murmured. The scissors gleamed. "Cut it," I said. "I will not regret it." Snip. 60 centimeters fell. The braid slipped from my head into my sister's palm, and loose clippings curled on the floor like tiny black question marks. Days later, as we were preparing to leave, my other sister, Asma, leaned close. "They say hair holds memory. This braid is full of them. Your new hair will grow, but it won't remember." I lowered the braid into a thin plastic bag. In the mirror, I saw a stranger, the bare nape, the hollow expression. We kept packing in silence, shirts folded, papers tucked away, shoes shuffled into corners of the suitcase. When I finally zipped the bag, the braid lay buried inside, quiet, sealed, a piece of me smuggled into exile. On September 23rd, our company walked more than 25,000 steps. My sister has an app, or more than 5 hours to reach Deir Abalah. The ceasefire was announced on October 9th. The day after, my family and I went back north to Al Rimal and the apartment we had rented there. Days later, I looked at myself in the mirror. My hair hadn't started to grow yet, and I felt regret. I had said I wouldn't, but I did. That braid had carried years of ordinary days, of laughter and sunlight, of the smell of home. I had cut it to survive, but survival had its own cost. My hair will grow again. Gaza will too, but neither of us will forget the sound of the scissors or the bombs. Those are excerpts from Displacement Begins with a Scissors Cut by Isra Al-Sigali, a writer and translator in Gaza, on electronicintifada.net. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Gaza and around the world. In Gaza, volunteers with the Samir Project, a mutual aid organization, recently kicked off their new initiative called Let's Build It to rebuild areas in Gaza City and the north. They sang songs in honor of the homeland and cleared rubble by hand with shovels and with small tractors. A young boy says, quote, "We are happy today that you are opening up the streets. As you can see, the streets are closed and people are unable to go to their homes. We are happy that you brought a hardworking team. This makes us very happy, and it's a good thing that people can go back to their homes. We promise that we will rebuild. God willing, we'll rebuild it." And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza.
You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.